is dedicated to each and every one of you who appreciate a great glass of wine. You know what I mean?
It's Monday. Let's raise a glass to the beginning of another week. It's time to unscrew, uncork, or saber a bottle. And let's begin exploring the wine glass. Before I get into the podcast, I just wanted to leave a reminder one more time that Apple had a podcast update. This caused an issue with the automatic downloads. If you are not receiving Exploring the Wine Glass podcast in your next up feed, it is because the settings have changed. Please go to Library, then Shows, and click Exploring the Wine Glass. If you don't see a check mark in the top right corner next to the three dots, the system does not download automatically. Please click on the down arrow and turn on automatic downloads. This will put a check mark next to the three dots. This will allow you to always know when a new episode drops. Sorry for the inconvenience, and thank you so much for following Exploring the Wine Glass. Now, on to the podcast. If you've been following me for a while, you will know that I am the founder of Cab Franc Day. I created the holiday back in 2015 and still am shocked at how the holiday has flourished. There is so much Cab Franc love out there. It truly warms my heart. Today, there are celebrations all over the world recognizing Cab Franc Day. And this podcast is a recording of one of those celebrations in Paso Robles. Please note, this was in a large room, so the sound is not as crisp as it typically is. If you listen to a lot of podcasts, you know that many ask for Patreon. We do not plan on doing this, but we do ask you to support the podcast by leaving a review. It takes only a few seconds of your time, but means so much to the show. Next best way to support Exploring the Wine Glass is to tell your friends, because if you love the podcast, your wine-loving friends will too. Finally, don't forget to head to the website, exploringthewineglass.com, to read the blog and to sign up for the newsletter so you can keep up with all happenings. Sláinte!
You are special, so very, very special. You are so special, you even in the
Hey everybody, I'm Lori Budd, a UC Davis winemaking program, Spanish wine scholar, Sommelier Service, champagne and Côte d'Aron specialist, and a WSET Level 2 graduate. You can find Exploring the Wine Glass on all the socials, as well as your favorite podcast catchers. If you haven't subscribed yet, now's the perfect time to swipe, subscribe, rate, and review. Stay in the know about all things wine by visiting my website, exploringthewineglass.com. I promise I'll never tell you what to drink, but I'll always share what's in my glass.
So that means you guys are going to fill in at least one third of what we're talking about. So I look forward to that. What we noticed is the evolution of Cab Franc is extraordinary in these six wines that we chose. We were looking for the green bell pepper. We were looking for the chili pepper. We were looking for the roasted pepper. We were looking for the purity elements of these wines. We expected some of them to be a little rough in their youth. Turns out they were not. This flight is going to definitely represent a new evolution in my understanding of the Cab Franc grape. And I expect most of you to understand this from that same perspective. What is it that is improving? Is it winemaking? Of course. But is it really, I think it's really based in how viticulture is being executed in these regions where these wines are coming from. We're opening up our canopy. We're choosing better soil and better areas to grow Cab Franc. We're making sure that gaps in the canopy are allowing the sun and wind to really affect and improve the quality of this fruit that is going into these wines. The more sun and wind we can get on that fruit zone, the less pyrazines we're going to get and a little bit more of a high-tone fruit character, which I think will be noticeable in most of these wines. Okay, this is the cue that the first wine is going to be poured. We were afraid that I'm a much more interesting presenter when you have wine in your glass. The more you drink, the better I sound. So I want to make sure that we are going to tease you today. We are going to talk about Cheval Blanc, and we're going to pour you a Finger Lakes, New York Cabernet Franc. There's a connection, East Coast. Remember, Thomas Jefferson tried really hard to grow more dough grapes at Monticello and failed horrendously. So I like to say this one represents the East Coast resurrection of an idea that beautiful wine can be grown in New York State. And right there on the Finger Lakes, which originally I believe were considered like the claws of some huge creature from the sky to the native population there. Obviously, we'll talk about New York right after Chivo Blanc, but we kind of thought Chivo Blanc needed a couple minutes just to talk a little bit about what makes it so special, besides a price tag that most of us can't afford. We actually asked them, believe it or not, they would not send us $18 for free. Really gone. I have no idea why. You know, out of 237,000 vines at Chivo Blanc, every single one is tagged. Every single one has a history. And can be basically, you know, buying 135,685. You can look it up, and it actually rates the fruit of every vine that comes off of those vines every year. I guess this is what you should do with all that extra money. But it's right on the border of San Emilio and Pomerol. It's not a first growth Bordeaux. Of course, San Emilio had its own classification system, the only 1855 system.
It's not.
What makes it so unusual, really, is that the three main soil types there, fine texture, clay, coarse texture, gravel, large gravel with sand, has a beautiful drainage and a beautiful ability to put amazing character in the wine right on the edge of ripeness. I think one thing you can all agree on with counting from almost any grape on the planet Earth is where it shows the highest quality is on the edge of ripeness. If grapes are grown in an area where ripeness is a phase complete every year, that might not produce the greatest wines in the world. But San Emilio, right on the edge of ripeness, and obviously for the famous top-tier Bordeaux, the highest Cabernet Franc percentage, usually about 52% Cab Franc, 43% Merlot, 5% Cabernet Sauvignon. Looks like just about everyone has been poured our first one. And let's thank that gentleman on the right, Constantine Franck. Frank, I've been told to say him all day for that. Constantine Franck. You can see a little bit of those amazing some of these lakes are actually under, the bigger lakes are actually under the ocean level. And in between these areas, you have these amazing little terroirs, what I would call mesoclimates. I think we'll use the term microclimate anymore. But obviously, one thing about this wine, don't stand on ceremony. Here we go, have some fun with this. We put ourselves through a lot of questions. We want to show this wine first. We thought this wine might have a little residual sugar. And we didn't know if we wanted to start with something a little bit higher than 3 or 4 grams of residual sugar. But it has a confectionery nose a little bit to me. But I love the fact that this is a New York Cab Franc. It doesn't show a lot of that green purity character. We thought that the elevated, sort of, like I said, sort of confectionery red fruits in this wine showed a character that we weren't quite ready for. We were ready for a big nose of green. And I really didn't show up like that. Of course, when I see a wine of this color, clearly this would be a Cabernet Franc from Finger Lakes. That color in the garden can reminds me a little bit more of a color that I would be expecting from a Pinot Noir. And I guess as a cinematographer guy, I just take my head out of the world of Pinot Noir. One thing I want to consider today is, does elegance lead to perfume? I think it's a really profound question to ask right in this moment that we're in American wine. Is our love affair with concentrations, our love affair with primary fruit, stealing terroir authenticity, and a sense of perfume from this wine? One thing I'll tell you about this wine is it's not very concentrated. So as lacking a lot of baby fat and fruit, I think what's going to come out is really going to be a beautiful expression of what the Finger Lakes can do for Cabernet Franc. I would love for you guys to take a moment to taste this wine, and I would love to hear your comments.
Not a lot of richness to it? Does that make more fruit present? Well, that was kind of not showing a lot of quality from back of the house. We got more across. We 13% alcohol, which is what is listed on the label. Somewhere between 12 and 14. If they're on.
Through the city.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Cab Franc, the Cab family, really pulled the city extraordinarily well from our market. Another couple comments about this Finger Lakes Cabernet Franc. Yeah, Yeah, I mean, you know, because Timberlake is known for making kind of like picnic lines. There's a question of what they get, it's red on the summer. I really like that. I really like that. Does anyone find this line green? I think push to there, I think you can find a little bit of purity and fresh in this one.
More on the jalapeno than bell pepper.
This one actually was gifted to us, but I believe it's third time. In fact, I think we might actually use one time to get a conversation about East Coast wineries investing in valleys. Last time I was in, 2 times ago in Virginia, all the wines, the first time I was in Virginia, were $57. And I'm like, wow, and then the next time I came, they were all $25 to $30. They finally decided that they were going to drink Virginia wine, they had actually for the better price. I do think I like this wine a lot. That's $30 price point, small price ratio. Over $30, I have probably over $22.95.
It's like she's in a piece.
That's not an easy job. It's so easy just to go to Vivino.
I live in a beautiful world. Mm-hmm. Last call on the Harry Potter. Any closing comments? What's your thought? How about food? What do you think? What's anything? Kind of have all the
It's beautiful.
Yeah, I did that on the really bad
Just to close with a little information about the wine, you can see in your glass, the wine that you're performing at Lisa Hoffman, excellent meditation, Jersey cow, where you put a slip canopy, wire trellis, so the sun basically comes in on both sides and slip trellis. So, I have a whole paper for meeting the high dinner. Changing the garlic to 90. Really harness the mirror of the wine. And you will allow yourself to get a little more calm. And it is maybe more flavors. In a situation where a single And we did actually have a conversation about sparkling Cabernet and dessert Cabernet. Those might be showing up at the Jack Frog Day for you.
Thank you. This is the second one, right? So he's telling me what it is after we drink it.
Yeah.
So this is the second one. That was the first one. That was the one he
talked about. I retired very early from a very lucrative career in public education.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And the kids broke in the drink, and I went to the
okay. I'm a little confused. Yeah,
it worked out really well to make it way more than ever was in teaching high school. But one thing I really want to mention too is just the spiritual home. The spiritual home of Tabernacle is Shino. Right between the Loire and the Vienne River, this beautiful gravelly deposit with tons of this very, very special twofold limestone. This is considered one of the greatest terroirs, if not the greatest terroir, for creating 100% varietal Cabernet. Last year, we talked a lot about dirt. Last year, we talked a lot about history. This year, we really want to let these wines speak for themselves and really get a lot more influence of what you guys are thinking about these wines. We've got Chinon, and we actually had a really strong opinion about putting this wine first, so making this the anchor for all other discussions about Cabernet Franc. Of course, you know, the Chibble block wouldn't have sucked either. But I would say that the Chinon, it speaks volumes, not only the way it was grown, not only the way it's made, but I think this might be, to me, the most typical Cabernet Franc for what I consider the typical style of Cabernet Franc and the varietal typicity of Cabernet Franc that we're going to be tasting. Now, Cabernet Franc represents about 90% of the wines produced in the Chinon region, in the Loire Valley. And of course, 10%, they make some beautiful Chenin as well. And those two handsome gentlemen at the bottom are brave enough to farm biodynamically. And it's nice when we taste a biodynamic wine, an organic wine, a fairly natural wine, not a lot added, not a lot taken away. When the wine does not smell like an unwashed monk. We love natural wine when it's post enlightenment and delicious and clean. And I think this is a very good example of a wine that is not only good for the environment, but also good for my mouth. Nicholas and Sylvain Beaublanc, man, that guy's got a lot about trees in his name. Signature wine of the Domaine Beaublanc, I think that means a fat tree, or fat wood, Beaublanc. 12 blocks untouched since the 15th century. I don't know what untouched means, but you know, I would love if I could have a vineyard that I hadn't touched since the 15th century that was making wine this delicious. My guess is the same block and the same terroir have been producing this wine for about 5 centuries. Deposits of Liège limestone clay atop yellow chisel rock, which of course really defines this region and the greatest terroirs. Of course, why is this limestone so important? Well, calcium is very important to the development of the grapevine, and specifically the thickness of the skin of a grape is dictated by the amount of exchangeable calcium at root level in any vine. Higher the amount of calcium, thicker the skin. Thicker the skin, you're going to see a reduction of juice in the skin to juice ratio. So you're going to see more extraction, you're going to see a little bit more character coming out in wines that are grown on high calcium soil or thicker skins in the grapes, which basically is going to reduce the amount of juice. Organic and biodynamic viticulture, and yes, the wine is still quite good, even though it was farmed organically by the minimum. I would say that is juice. I would say either juice or a Mai Tai. It looks to me like almost like a really dark rosé juice coming straight out of the press. Or as the Germans would say, Blumenwein. Feather wine, it's half fermented. They love to drink that stuff because they just can't wait. One second, let me go back and get. We are going to talk about the Loire just a little bit more. $44. $44 wine. Now, one thing I think about this wine, this is, I think, the driest wine in our flight. So the wine I found was not only dry, but bone dry. Or if I was going to have to use a technical term, bone effing dry. This wine, to me, really shows even more character of the Chinon because of how dry it is. And we also love that the fact that it's not a fruit-driven wine, it's not about primary fruit character. There's a lot going on here for a fairly young wine. Let's see. It opened up a really good conversation about Chinon versus Bourguignon. The spiritual home versus the modern home of Cab Franc. I would have to defer to a sommelier that spends more time in Chinon. But I would say, to me, this is a fairly classic, from my perspective, a fairly classic Loire style, Chinon style Cabernet Franc from Chinon. But I'd love to hear what you guys said about the wine. So, like the combination of savory and pretty clean, I would say, for a Loire, and especially for an organic or biodynamic wine. Absolutely. Next. Don't make me call on you, I have taught high school. Yes, so the Tufaux giving an expression, giving the wine sort of a chalky kind of minerality, a little bit of grip. I think the quality of the tannins is quite extraordinary. I think it's still, we talk a lot in our group panel about what it means for a wine to be round. The idea that it's kind of beginning, the middle, and the end, it tells a story. It has nothing to do with tannins, it has nothing to do with acidity. But a round wine just speaks to us. And we found this wine, even though it was young, it's tannic, it's grippy. It's not, for such a young wine, there's not really a lot of primary fruit, but it really does have this beautiful story to tell. I think a lot of that story really does have to do with soil. And this is truly a wine that under $50 it really expresses terroir, which is not easy to find in the market today. Other comments about this beautiful Chenon. As a sort of continental climate that is probably it's right on the edge of where you're getting some cooling influence, but not very much. My feeling is this would probably be somewhere between a high region 2 and a low region 3, probably region 2 on the Winkler scale. Probably 2,400 to 2,800 growing green days. And as a result, it's almost like chicken or the egg. Chenon belongs there. And it belongs, you know, and of course, Chenon, you can't really separate the grape from the place. I would generally say, I would expect the weather there to probably be more Willamette than Santa Maria or Paso. So kind of, you know, Goldilocks zone. Let's just say it is just perfect for Cabernet Franc. That was a really good question. So whether or not I know enough about Cabernet Franc to really answer that question, which is, does Cabernet Franc express itself in a way, sort of the same way of like Pinot Noir being purely expressive in how it shows in various regions. I don't think Cab Franc is as difficult to grow in some places as Cab Franc. I think in some places, Cab Franc makes a much better, much more marketable wine. But in little ancillary regions, I think the place where Cab Franc makes its greatest inroads is right outside great Cab regions and areas where they tried to grow Cabernet Sauvignon in modern times and failed. And going back to Cab Franc can have much greater success. And I don't think that's true with the Loire. I don't think that's necessarily true of, say, Napa, but when I think of Santa Barbara, I have early success with Cabernet Franc, especially with Rick Longoria making some gorgeous Cab Francs back in the 90s that really got us involved. So I would say to me, there's places where Cab Franc is born and it lives. Saint-Emilion, the right bank, we're talking about the Loire, Saumur, Anjou, a little bit, Corgi, Chenon, those are the places it belongs. Now when we try to culturally appropriate Cabernet Franc and put it where we want, sometimes it's disappointing, but sometimes it shows even better character in those regions that are just a little cooler than what's necessary for growing a Cabernet Franc. Other comments about the wine? For me, as I taste this wine, I would think I can lay this wine down easily 5 to 7 years. It's already really dry, and as a result of being really quite this dry, I think it's much more approachable in its youth than a wine from the same vintage from the New World. So I would say it's going to offer at least as much pleasure in the glass right now, but I suspect in 5 years from now it's going to open up with savory notes and meaty notes and a lot of depth. And I think there's not a lot of baby fat for this wine to lose, but I would say 5 to 7 easy, and I wouldn't be surprised with proper cellaring that this wine would be delicious as well. I don't think this wine is going to budge much in the next 5 years, but that's totally my perspective as a Santa Barbara Pinot guy. So take that with a huge grain of salt. Any other comments about how people think this wine will age? No, too cold for Cab Franc and Santa Maria. And I would just say, to sort of close the idea, I mean, in a culture where 85% of wines purchased in the United States are consumed within 48 hours, our cellar is an Escalade on the way home from Trader Joe's. And that's okay. You drink it, we'll make more. I'm a wine salesman. I don't sell wine storage and cellars. But I think we love to drink wines on our way up. It's a bummer when we get it on the way down. But I do strongly believe that wine in its maturity has much more to tell us about the place where the wine is grown. I think young wine is more about what the winemakers did to it and the winemaker's adaptation. I think when a wine is fully mature, it's stripped of adaptation. What's left is what was given to us by the grapes, by the land, by the climate, by the dirt and soil and nutrients. Any last comments about the Chenon? It might. I would say, and I don't know. Do you know of any Cab Franc being grown in Wyoming? A little bit? And I would guess it would probably also be from Southern Oregon a little bit more. As you get down near the Umpqua, I think you're going to see a lot more Syrah, and I think in areas where they're finding success with Syrah in Oregon would be just perfect for Cab Franc. And there are some Oregonian Cab Francs, so maybe we need to throw one in the mix in one of our subsequent Cab Franc days. Also, let's move slowly away from the spiritual home, the modern home of Cab Franc. And things are just going to get super, super interesting because I was not given a spirit. No. I'm not traveling today. T minus 2 hours for the Niners. We'll move on to these two handsome gentlemen holding some type of pink football. Now you're right over there. Ripalera, pizza, or Bulgaria. So we're going to be talking a little bit about the Bulgaria region, which of course is very, very important for the development of the modern Italian wine industry, because this is basically the region, or very close to the region, where we first got our first term when Robert Parker started tasting these wines he called Super Tuscans. Now, of course, if you are in Tuscany, please do not say Super Tuscan because it will be very, very nasty to you and not give you white truffles during October. So be very, very careful because they don't like this idea that Tuscan wasn't super before they started stuffing international grapes into the Sassicaia and all those other ornamental ones. This region is obviously going to be very, very important in the discussion of this next Cabernet Franc. Peter, do you happen to know is this 100% Cabernet Franc from Chypre? 100% Cabernet Franc from Chypre. Chypre is the producer. C-I-F-R-A, Chypre. This is going to be an elevated vineyard, about 1,000 feet of elevation, so only about 300 or 400 meters. It's obviously going to be a very important part to us. This wine came across as beautifully tangy, mineral, savory, lots of meaty terracotta notes. This is a biodynamic grower and natural winemaking, which is claimed on the label on the website. I always ask, how does knowing a wine is organic and naturally made influence the way it tastes? I would love someone to jump on that. If this wine is natural and organic, nothing added, nothing taken away, does that change the way that we look at the wine? And if you have any thoughts about how this wine is hitting your own palate, or what do you imagine? This will give you some more information on the wine. 2020 Rubagno Chitra, Cabernet Franc, Toscana IGT, Toscana Pass. Winemakers Luca De Toma and Alina Cheri. Biodynamic, backed up by the deer. Soil is rough and difficult with plain large stones and steep vineyards. Spontaneous fermentation, using no added yeast, indigenous yeast in the cement tank, and it's aged in amphora. So, as far as I can tell, no oak whatsoever in this wine. Natural oak-free wine. That takes some chances. Nice thing about oak barrels from my time when I made Pinot Noir, they really can really cover up little problems in the wine. I would say a winemaker should take 5 years to be able to get a license in California to use oak in winemaking. Because you should be able to make a badass wine without oak before you start using oak. It's sort of like learning to cook before you jump into salt, right? And obviously salt is important. Oak is very important too. But knowing this wine is not only natural, biodynamic, but also oak-free. That really does give us an idea of the terroir of this region, because there's nothing getting in the way. Not a lot of vineyards also have oak trees on them that produce barrels. So barrels always going to express a different terroir of where it's grown. Certainly. So knowing that about the wine, I would love to hear what you guys have to say or any questions about it. Remember, I'm here to facilitate. I don't consider myself a Cab Franc expert, but I'm sure trying to. Yeah, Chris was talking a little bit about tannin structure of oak tannin versus grape tannin, because this is 100% grape tannin. So what an awesome opportunity to understand what grape tannin tastes like, as opposed to the softer, more polymerized idea of the tannins that come from a toasted oak barrel. So again, they're not legitimizing an Italian wine with a French accent of oak. This is purely an expression of the place that was grown and the Cabernet Franc. Well, I would say oak tannins can actually help preserve a wine. That's a good question. We're talking about ageability. And I'm not the end all expert here. I would like to know how you guys think this wine would age and how long you've let it down. I haven't heard much from the back of the room.
Depends on how they put it together. What cork did they use? Was it a long range cork or was it one that's...
Everything today was either under DM or natural cork. So it is under a natural cork product, and DM would be very happy hearing me say that. So it is a cork finish one, 2020, so it's a baby. The permeability of the DM corks is actually listed by the size and the nature of the cork. This, the producer put a DM5 in it, meaning they expect this wine to be consumed in the near term, 2, 5 to 7 years. That is a really good question that I'd love to be interested in. In general, it was fermented in a cement tank, and so when they moved it from cement tank, I don't know how they rack from the cement into the amphora, but absolutely, I've never heard of a racking technique moving from liquid from one vessel to another where you don't leave the leaves at the bottom and throw those leaves away, unless the leaves have some special idea. So my idea is there would be very minimal leaf contact in the amphora or the cavernary. I think cavernary is a better word for an aging vessel. I think amphora is said to be used to move wine, and cavernary for storing wine as well as fermenting. So the question, that's a really good answer, a really good question. I guess because it's a natural, biodynamic, organic, they probably are using a very gentle method to move the wine from place to place. My guess is they probably don't care if the little leaves get propagated in the amphora. And of course, if you have a little more leaf content in the aging of the wine, it's going to basically give the wine a little bit more richness and feed the wine nano protein, which really suspends flavor in the solution in those wines. So, I'm surprised with the popularity of hazy beers, we haven't started to see hazy wines. Because leave some leaves in a wine, it really adds a lot of interesting character and flavor. Yeah. On purpose? So did they mean, was it a very purposeful and deliberate action? I would say yes, it is very purposeful, and because not only have they very carefully made this as part of their marketing, that these wines don't have remote character, but I think it also just makes a wonderful sort of story, right? We don't get to taste a lot of wines that are bereft of oak, especially when the wine is this price point. So my guess is it would be a very deliberate attempt to really showcase the terroir, to really showcase what the Bollier can do in the area around Bollier for cabinet crop. Any other questions about Chipre?
Yes.
We just happen to have an Italian wine scholar with us.
Were the classifications prior to actually Bollier? When Sassicaia did its first wine out of 100% Bordeaux varietals, it had to be classified as a vino di cavolo, basic table wine. The quality was so good, the partner discovered it really elevated Italian wine, because people didn't really understand it, didn't really have a world presence, but now with these international varietals in there, it elevated the entire Italian wine industry. So the government in response to the IDT, in Cassini, geographic idea, not as much rule about grapes you use or production, but the grapes had to come from a certain region. This wine technically says IDP, which is the European Union's equivalent IDP. As far as this region, by the way, Bulgaria, of course, because of Sassicaia, I don't know how much Sassicaia is. Yeah. So what it did is it elevated all of Bulgari. Bulgari now has its own DLC. So Bulgari Grosso and Bulgari is a DLC. Actually, Lucasan Vino, which is where Sassicaia, the original so-called super custom, has its own DLC. It's the only DLC in Italy with a single estate. So this is actually Costa, just west of Bulgari are the best value wines in most of Italy because it doesn't fall into the Bulgari DOC. This is $35. We looked at wines from Bulgari, I think the most one we found was close to $100. So, and this wine actually has cult status in Italy because people can afford it and still drink what Bulgari has to offer, but because it falls outside the DOC and it's an IDP. That
answers your
question.
Excellent, yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Peter, my next student, right here. Yeah, so I also teach food and wine pairing out in Hancock, February, March. Come on down, it's going to be a great class. It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, that's it. Loads of fun, look up out of Hancock College. All right, so we talked a little bit closing on Chipre, and took me 130 times saying that before I said it correctly. Chief, I have a beautiful wine. Closing comments. What I'd love to know. We had our first three wines.
And now, a word from our sponsor. Exploring the Wine Glass is brought to you by Dracena Wines. Dracena Wines is an artisan winery located in Paso Robles, California. They have been producing wine since 2013. Their first vintage began with one wine, their classic Cabernet Franc, which received a 91 in Wine Enthusiast. Since then, they have increased production as well as expanded their portfolio, have received many accolades, including multiple double gold medals and consistent 90-plus ratings. Visit their website, www.dracenawines.com, or use the link in the show notes to schedule a private tasting and to see their entire portfolio. Purchase your award-winning wine and let Dracena Wines help turn your moments into great memories.
I would love to know who preferred out of all three. This goes back to Henri Jallier, one of my favorite wine writers. He said, the fundamental problem with tasting wine is if I put one wine in front of you, the question is, do you love it? If I put two wines in front of you, the question becomes,
which do you love better?
Preference is the hot dog with wine, the valuation. Every wine deserves an hour at table. Every wine deserves delicious things. Every wine deserves to be lingered over. And honestly, what we're doing today is speed dating at best, a little bit of a beauty contest at worst. So, in that sense, to celebrate Henri Jallier, I would like to know, out of the first three wines, who preferred the Finger Lakes? Okay. I did like that confectionery. I think it's one of the finer Finger Lakes Cabernet Francs that I've had. Who preferred the Chinon? Chinon's got some love. How about the Chitra? Wow, Chinon is, just got put on edge. Really interesting that a wine, it's interesting that both of the second and the third wines didn't have a character that really, none of these wines have really been oak-driven. And we're about to change that with wine four from Vidal. And yes, I have to say that about 100 times before I stop saying the why. The grape, Villefranche, does get the eye on the end, but Villefranche, that region, is in southwest Hungary. Now, if you remember last year, I had to explain to you that we were not tasting Villefranche, that we were tasting Eger. Eger, a little bit more on the north. Remember last year, the Eger was fairly elegant, fairly restrained, beautifully elegant and earthy. Now we go to basically the heat, basically just a heat bowl in southern Hungary. And I love the fact that the winemaker's name is Attila. Because it was the Huns and the Visigoths who drove the Alans from Transcaucasia into Spain that gave us Cabernet Franc. So talk about full circle. Attila the Hun back to a winemaker named Attila Ager. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. So that's the double punch bowl. The idea is that the valley itself absorbs the heat and doesn't give it up to give Cabernet Franc just enough heat summation to get it fully ripe. This is Hungary's first designated PDO region, which would be a vague approximation of an AOC, ADA, an area that actually matters in the production of grapes locally. They grow Portuguesa, Condarca, and Campos. Bordeaux grapes, they prefer Cabernet Franc, and of course they call it Bologna Franc. Cab, Merlot, Syrah, the continental climate, going to obviously have very cold winters, very hot summers. Varying elevations are going to give varying qualities of the sunlight. Photosynthetic reactive radiation is going to be different at 5,000 feet as it will be at 2,000 feet. So using varying elevations to put these wines together gives you a spice, sort of a spice box to put them together exactly the same wine you want. They will say that their wines are full-bodied in nature, rich fruit flavors, and well-structured tannins. Let's get our nose and mouth in this glass and see if we agree. And you're into this, about 70% new Hungarian barrels. Melnox, I've got to agree or disagree. Melnox said you can't over-oak a wine, but you can under-wine the oak.
I used to thought that was total bullshit. And I now I've used the four-letter expletive. I can only use one per, because you didn't think I was doing it. Proper four-letter expletive should be like a proper exclamation point in your writing. Never accept. So the idea is can the line be overoaked? Well, sure it can. But if there's enough concentration in the line, Moller Shea, the greatest chardonnay in the world, is 200% new oak. How's that possible? They ferment the juice in brand new barrels and then rack it out of those barrels into brand new barrels and then sell the first barrel for more than they paid for them for people to make scotch in, but then you can say it's a Moller Shea barrel of scotch.
That's
the most brilliant marketing I've ever heard. You buy a 1,200 euro barrel and sell it for 1,400 euros after you've used it for fermentation. So the question is, how is the oak treatment hitting you guys? First question I'd like to ask. Think about the oak flavor in the wine, the toastiness of the wine. Is this wine appropriately oak? And how does it affect? I think this might be the first one we hit in our panel that we thought showed an expression of oak, but it's Hungarian oak. So again, I think you could argue it is from the same type of soils and same area. I'd love to hear some comments on this Hungarian Gamay. I will not try to pronounce that. Did I tell you a secret? No one used French oak until the end of World War II when that occurred. All French wines were used Hungarian and or Eastern European oak was absolutely predominant. The only reason why French oak became popular after World War II is the French winemakers lost access to Eastern Europe. So they began to cannibalize their own forests and find out that the Vosges, that the Troncay, that the Bertrange, that Limousin, all these areas produce amazing Quercus robur. It is the same species of white oak, Quercus robur. American oak is Quercus alba. So yeah, Quercus alba, a lot more kind of like, you'll get a lot of vanilla, you'll get a lot of dill, and it just doesn't have the same kind of toasty, roasty flavor, but proper Hungarian oak can certainly be just as high quality as French oak, and a lot of American winemakers, and a lot of Australian winemakers are moving to Eastern European oak, Russian oak, Slovenian oak, Hungarian oak, because it's 20-30% cheaper. And the barrel makers, the coopers, are catching up in their quality, which is great, because I used to buy Eastern European barrels back in the late 90s, and they leaked like a sieve. It's lovely that they're putting together much better barrels in the States. And thank you for the comment. This wine's older. So this is the oldest wine we've had. 5 years from vintage day, we're starting to see a different view of Cab Franc with a little bit of age on it. And we've had some questions about aging, so I want you to look at this wine 5 years down the line and ask ourselves a fundamental question. Will this wine improve in 5 years from now, or is it better drinking than the $37. 14.5. I don't really get a lot of alcoholic heat. Is it just me, or maybe I'm getting hungry because I've been drinking? But I'm trying to think about food a lot with this wine. This one I think is ready for table. I think the last few ones, maybe, a bit fresh, delicious, complex. I don't know, what is it about this wine that's making me think, you know, maybe about a steak au foie or, I think we're talking about spiciness up here. The wine is showing some really beautiful spice character. Maybe some Moroccan lamb. Oh, they say that there's a Hungarian dish where you can put pork fat on a fork. And you melt it, and as it melts, you put it on bread and you eat it. Sounds like water with extra steps. Something I think, obviously, I like to look at food wine pairing with two rules. Intensity to intensity, fat to structure. With a lot of structure, you need a lot of fat. So the higher the structure in the wine, the more fat you need in the dish. So dripping pork fat on bread seems perfectly appropriate. To exactly what I want to accomplish with this wine. Any other comments? That's a beautifully put. The oak is not gratuitous, it's well balanced, but it's clearly where it's oak without fear. 70% new French, or new Hungarian, you think.
And
you're
just talking about having a bone marrow burger?
Bone marrow burger. Yeah.
I mean, I got an Instagram.
They have updates.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if I go down, someone's stick sugar in it. That sounds great. I love that too. When you started talking about that burger, I remember when Bradley Ogden first came to Solvang, he put a $40 burger on the menu. It was a third pound of ground prime chuck. with 4 ounces of foie gras and half a lobster's head.
Wow.
And a map to the cardiologist on the back of the menu. So we go to Dollar Oyster Night. My wife would be like, how do you spend $300 on Dollar Oyster Night? Because I eat 50 oysters and then I eat a half a burger.
Yeah,
right? And that's all I need to do. I think this wine, that dish, sounded like it almost would be like a Sauternes burger. No, it turned out the bigger the red, the better it was. And I love lobster with spicy reds, especially if they're in some type of a spice cream sauce. Fat is flavor, and we all love it. Even vegans will still love it. Last comments on this beautiful banana. Is your favorite wine thus far? I think it's really starting to show some beautiful Cap Franc. So far, though, pretty interesting that there's not a lot of green on that, right? You know, where's the purity? Is it hiding? No, it has been transformed to terpene by sunlight because of one gentleman from Tasmania. His name is Dr. Richard Smart, and he did for viticulture what Louis Pasteur did for fermentation science. So in the early 90s, Dr. Richard Smart revolutionized canopy management by proving that pyrazine mitigation could happen by proper pulling of leaves in the fruiting zone. And so what I think we're finding is, 20 years later, we're really seeing Dr. Richard Smart's profound influence on the evolution of Cabernet Franc and its green character that is once a, you know, really part of its nature. None of that survived my gossip. Yeah, well, I mentioned that this wine actually did extraordinarily well at the International Cab Franc competition that came in second place. So, you guys can all be certified wine judges. Congratulations. That's exactly what you did. Yes. So, the question was about preference, and I think you guys just got called out for having Paso Palace. He's not my students. The question is, do we think that, you know, being in a Paso cellar, Paso being known for, you know, some concentration in their wines, that that's going to have a profound influence? Sometimes I think if I'm used to big, rich, powerful wines, tasting something a little bit more energetic, a little more cut, a little more elegant is exciting. But certainly we do end up with cellar palates. One thing I would like to really focus on this exact question is the difference between concentration and persistence. Because Domaine de Romanée-Conti, the most expensive wine in the world, has no concentration. So if you're spending $12,000 for your new bottle of Roman Conti, you expect it to hit you across the face with a dollop of fruit, you're going to be vastly disappointed. That wine doesn't really have any of that, but it has persistence. You'll taste that wine 2 minutes after you put it in your mouth. So I always want to talk about, I think to me, after 30 years in the business, what I'm looking for is wines of persistence, wines of place, vintage, vineyard, and variety. That's what I want. I want to taste the vintage. Vintage is the wave. Winemaker is a surfer. You can only surf the wave you're given. You can only make the wine vintage provides. If you want to wine against vintage, I don't think maybe making wine place is up your alley. A couple of studies can see that the vineyard is organic, like most of the wine that we taste today. Fermentation happens in wooden nests, and then 300 liters and less. What's really interesting is that's just a little bit larger than a normal barrel. It's a 75 liter is about, you know, 20 extra gallons, a 70% new, and 30% used. It looks like they're saying they only use second fill of barriques and then they sell their barrels off. Oh, we're talking about the next one. Or half. No, I cannot. The answer is no. Okay, we are down to our last two lines. We're going to be venturing to the Mendoza, and then we're going to be coming right back to Napa Valley, because what a great place to finish up. So we really loved this little beautiful graphic that we got from the Vino del Sol and the Argentinian wine. You can see that the altitude and the slow maceration of the grapes, the sun exposure with a dry climate, sunlight exposure, and sanity. I don't know if you guys actually see it. Sun exposure gives them sanity. I don't understand, but it must be something lost in translation. It does. Sunshine makes me happy.
The soil has low fertility and alluvial origin. Alluvial just means geologic kind of material gets hit by rain. It kind of like breaks up into small parts and ends up between mountains. And then the purity of the water right from the Andes is also going to have a strong influence on Uca Valley terroir. So thank you, Argentina, for teaching us a little something. Alejandro Vigil likes to call himself the Messi of wines. I guess that means he's moving to Florida. This is 90% cap rock with 10% malic, and you can tell. One reason why this wine kind of had to go near the end of the flight is we thought that 10% malic would have been a little bit kind of much earlier in the tasting. The vineyard is right there at almost 5,000 feet of elevation, deep calcareous rocky soil. So yet again, we have another high calcium soil, which is going to increase the skin thickness, which is going to should give us a really nice dark expression of Cabernet Franc, with a little bit of the Malbec in there as well. Again, another wild yeast fermentation. I don't know if it was on purpose, but we certainly did stack. We could have actually told you guys we were doing sort of organic / biodynamic expression today of a lot of different Cabernet Francs. 15 months in 100-year-old food, hopefully they don't have to clean them. That would freak me out as a wine maker using 100-year-old. Yeah, you're basically, unless they take them out and like basically shave toast them every couple of years, you're basically making wine in tartaric acid. Because there's not a moment of this wine to probably test soap. You're only testing the crystals of tartaric acid formed during the aging of the wine. 15 months is a serious commitment, because that means you have to have two sets of food. You have to have enough food that one wine is being aged, and then you're going to over vintage the wine, and so you need empty food to make sure you can continue. When I read about this wine, what I've been hearing more about is how many people really love this label. People really, really seem that know this area, go to this wine quite often as one of the greatest expressions of Uca Valley in the Cabernet Franc. So what I would love to hear from you guys is your thoughts, comments, questions about one leading question, of course, would be how does Malbec influence this wine in a way that takes us a little bit away? How does Malbec influence it, and you think it does? I got the comment, grapier, more primary. Definitely a Venice character. You know, UC Davis, you can use any fruit to describe a wine in the past except the word grape. You must use the term Venice. Because heaven forfend, grape produces grape in the wine. It smells like a microphone. The microphone smells like a beer.
Last year.
When
is
this glass?
What? How much is this?
That's humble. It's part of the family. And do you know those ones? All right, so closing out our beautiful wine from Argentina, I would love to hear just a couple more comments either. Foods you'd love to have with it? When you play this, obviously, I think this wine can wait out a while. Fire pit wine. Especially what I'm really thinking about when I'm putting this wine is putting together a nice little cheese plate, maybe some beautiful, some nice black cheddar. I think goat cheese would be lovely with the wine as well. Good grip to it, but not over the top. Other comments about this beautiful Argentinian wine? I know we've got some people that love talk. It's so hard. First of all, I don't know if we know if this is co-fermented or blended as varietal wine.
You get a lot of interest out of this.
I don't, I'm only allowed two songs, so if I have to tell the three, I can answer your question. But I would say all institutions foster me. And sexual harassment.
You're taking it with you.
Why am I going on this?
Oh,
I'm afraid it will happen. The answer, I know enough about Malbec to know that I do expect a little more sauvage out of Malbec than I do out of Cab Franc. I expect black and purple flowers out of Cab Franc, and now that I think it adds some base notes, duck that, a little bit of richness, a little bit more what I would call sauvage or savory character. So I will basically show you that, that to admit ignorance is wise, and I'm just going to be wise today. It's a beautiful savory note. If I could tell you where it came from, I'd be a better man. Anyone want to talk about it? Oh, cool. And the irony, of course, is the person on the right Cap Front is showing more of that beautiful violet kind of purple flower character. Absolutely. Final comments on what we're doing right here in Argentina before we move back to California. Or to California. Which is always the promised land. Do you guys know what the New York Times headline was the day they broke the golden spike and connected the Intercontinental Railroad? California annexes the United States. Yeah! California annexes the United States. Love that. Closing comments, Argentina. Love to hear it. Your seminar. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's absolutely. The comment of Madeline was that the wine she imagines would be sort of a good combination gift. To Peter's point, that as a Paso Palace, this wine should appeal to us because it has the strong tannin, beautiful acidity, big fruit, a little bit more broad, a little bit more ripe, a little more attack. Which is a British term for how the wine hits the palate. I think this wine definitely is showing. We did try to kind of tell a story from the first wine to the last wine, moving from light and confectionery to a little more dense and concentrated. Yes, we all would. And we tried. They wouldn't do it for us. There's a special machine. It's interesting. I think as a gifted wine, we can thank our friends down in Argentina for such a beautiful thing. Next time I see these folks, I'll make sure we're in the bottle for that bargain. Because I know that's what they drink at. And I do too. Let's close up with Napa.
Wow.
All right. Speaking of oak. Now, this is a complicated story. First of all, I have to ask, before I talk about Toto Cologne, is anyone here from Mondavi or from Bedstock? Sweet, we can say anything we want.
Oh, thank God.
I'm going to ask Jeff to talk to me for a couple minutes about this beautiful vineyard and give us a little bit of an overview, and then we'll get your comments on this one.
All right, so this is part of, a year ago when we started doing the Cap Franc Day concept here, and started really trying to make all of this happen for you guys. We kind of have those sit-down conversations where, if you could pour any Cap Franc, what would you do? And even though our focus for the tasting really is educating on, the worldwide Cap Franc that exists out there, we always said, well, it'd be pretty cool to get something from Toto on, right? Just slightly outside the budget of what we've put together for this sort of thing, but luckily the cool part of wine is that you kind of retain that Rolodex of everyone you knew in life, and as it worked out, one of my roommates from the private little house that we lived in up in Davis, where it was myself, Nick Gisselson from Screaming Eagle, and Ben Leishman, who now works for Walsh Vineyard Management up in Napa and Sonoma. Well, he maintained a lot of really good contacts with UC Davis' Vineyard Department, and as it turns out, UC Davis actually owns a little piece of property that was part of the 1881 Tocolon planting by H.W. Crabb. He actually gifted it to the federal government, who in turn gifted that little block to UC Davis in order to use it as their research station in Napa. So they actually have a fair bit of fruit that they use mainly for experimental purposes. But starting a couple years ago, they offered him a chance to buy a little bits of fruit from there. It started with him having access, being the only person buying Cabernet from there. And then in 2021, for the first time, they offered him a little plot of Cabernet Franc as well. So looking at it, it's that grayed-out area right there. So right across the road from Opus 1, Beckstoffer, the Turk, literally right next to Davi's Tocolon Cap Franc. So obviously a great neighborhood to be in, and I'm sure it doesn't have the same name cachet necessarily as slapping down something where you can legally put Tocolon on the label. The name Old Federal Vineyard has been coined by the folks selling a little bit of this wine, just as a reference to how the property came to be and how it got separated from what is now legally known as Tokelon. But I thought this would be a really fun wine to point out or put into this tasting. It's entirely, you know, from that same plot of land. Certainly needs to be at the end, one probably for a concentration of fruit and heft, but the other, he certainly was maybe a little less subtle than some of the other brands with the oak, so you get that. What Frederick and I kind of like to call the Napa profile, that Gardashew Taranso combo. Certainly noticeable oak on there, but this was definitely something that gave us the opportunity to say we actually had a total line of wine at this comparative tasting, and hopefully it's a fun experience for you guys. His brand website is Forgotten Union Wines, and you know, he mainly just makes tiny batches of stuff he has access to from his vineyard management. Thank you, Jeff.
Wow.
So, to close on this wine before I ask for comments, and then we're going to talk just a second about the wine pairing and close up and get our panel up here. My comment was this was a cellar-driven wine, and other people on the panel would not agree with me. I thought this wine, to me, was a little heavy-handed with the oak. It's young. It hasn't integrated yet. My feeling as a winemaker was that I wasn't really tasting as much of the place. I was tasting a little bit more of the winemaker's adaptation. The people on the rest of the panel disagreed and said this was classic Napa Valley sort of Tokelon slash sort of federal Cab Franc. And I think the answer is yes. I mean, the nicest thing about wine is it's the one thing we can be subjective about loudly and proudly, right? There's no right answer in wine. The local wine you live and the local wine you drink is the wine you live. So this wine, plenty of new French oak on it. I like the concentration and persistence. I think it's a wine that has both. What were your thoughts? And then we're going to take our final vote on favorites. What do you think? Residual sugar for you was a little high on this one?
I think this is a very nice wine, but it's way too soon to be even tasting it. It should be laying down and waiting for its time. It's not its time yet. It's too young.
You were saying maybe if you laid it down?
It's too young to be drinking it. It needs more time.
No, I totally agree. I think, funny thing about oak, you pay a lot for it, and then people complain there's too much in it, and then you wait long enough for it to integrate, and you can't taste it. So there is basically a time and place where it's an act hand change and what more stuff you want, obviously. And that's important. Other comments about Napa? Great, people are getting more talking. Are the cuttings available? From the old metal?
I doubt it, but you know it's a bit
Clones are as clones does.
So
talking a little bit about the PD side, clones and everything, we don't know if they have cuttings available, but it would just be clones 214. It's a rootstock, it's not an owner of it, and the letters and numbers AXR1. You guys can look that one up. That'll be a huge can of worms. We've done it! This wasn't safe. We got through it. We're going to talk a second about food. If you want to talk about food, just look to the slide. And then we're pretty much right on time. We're just going to get through this, talk a little bit about food, and then just thank the people who need to be thanked, and we'll bring up our panel.
A 55?
Yeah.
I'm going to say
55. That's
what you paid, y'all. That's not the MSRP. What is the
MSRP, Jeff? I think his Cabernet he retails at 95.
95.
The Cab Franc is not available on his website yet.
Okay, so thank you, Jeff, for bringing this on, Jeff. So real quick, I have to talk about food and wine, right? We're meeting up tomorrow, I'm getting this, so I hope that's good for us. So, one thing you have noticed to all the wines, when you read behind the wine bottle, this wine pairs with Cabernet Franc. This Cabernet Franc pairs with lamb, or with roasted quail. You see the profile of the wines, the six wines in front of you? The first and the last are so different. It's still Cabernet Franc, but it's so vibrantly different. So I always say wine does not pair with a porto. Wine pairs with how that porto is made. It's the bridge between the wine and the porto. It's the sauces, the earth, the spices, the sauce. That's what you're looking for. It's one other thing we have noticed. The first and the last wine are very different, but with each wine there is a certain profile. None of you ask for palate cleansers between the wines because Cabernet Franc has a balance to it. There's balanced acidity, there's balanced tannin, there's a vibrancy in the berries. So it's a very prolific wine to pair with food regardless of the region it comes from. Because when you pair food and wine, if it's a study of the wine, then the wine needs to be two steps forward. So you want it to have a little bit of more acidity, more tannin, a little bit more fruit. If it's the study of food, if you're in a restaurant and you have ordered that gorgeous, let's go with the quail again, you want the wine to support it. You're there in honor of the food and the wine is there to dance with the food. In that case, you want balance, you want harmony. And that's what Cabernet Franc does so beautifully. It has been some harmony no matter which region it comes from. There's a certain harmony. Going from one wine to another, you didn't feel like you needed to cleanse your palate. And that's because these wines have that balance. So imagine these wines in a restaurant, they lend the same kind of balance. If you don't believe me, what you should do is get 3 glasses of wine. You look cool doing that anyway in a restaurant. And ask them to.
Good time to thank Mia and Kunal for everything you do for the wine community here. So thank you guys. We didn't do the same hardware style as Mia's job, but I needed one, so that was very kind of them. Finishing up, I just want to say that a bottle of wine is an investment to keep the people we love at the table for an extra hour every day. And that's what we love about wine, right? I mean, I drink a lot of beer standing up, playing golf. I drink a lot of spirits between table and floor. But wine is all about food and friends. And, you know, I would say that, you know, not only this, but we really got to have to focus that every wine to become requires 3 things, right? Time, love, and food. If you don't have time, love, and food, I don't know what we're doing, right? Wine gives us everything we need to experience time, love, and food in the most profound manner that human beings can do on the planet Earth. Every breath is a miracle. Love the people around you, enjoy the wine, and thanks to Cass, thanks to all the volunteers, woo-hoo! Thanks to every one of you for loving how to do this, and finally,
this has been another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like me to discuss, please reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Exploring the Wine Glass. I am also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Of course, you can always email me at exploringthewineglass@gmail.com and sign up for my newsletter at exploringthewineglass.com. If you enjoyed what you heard, please rate, review, and subscribe to help others find me more easily. And most importantly, tell your wine-loving friends, because if you like the podcast, they will too. Podcast music is Wine by Kevins. Until next week, slancha.
I want a nice glass right now.